I didn't say that, but let's face it, everybody cheats a little.
Not me.
Have you ever called your wife from the office?
So?
Well, that's a toll call. Where's that benefit listed in your employee agreement? Isn't that kind of picky, Marg? Jack didn't ask us about making 20-cent phone calls. Hold on, Alice. First of all, you've totally dismissed a phone call as not being cheating. We have, what, about 1,000 employees total? Suppose half of them made just a 20-cent toll call each day. That's $100 a day. Spread that over 200 work days a year, and that's an easy $20,000. And I'll bet the number comes closer to $100,000 a year.
What I'm hearing, Marge, is you really wouldn't mind taking 20 cents here and there from the company?
I'm saying that's the reality of any business.
Would you feel the same way if this was a mom-and-pop shop?
About a 20-cent call? You bet.
Okay, let's try it a different way. If you could get away with, say, $1,000 extra on your expenses, and there was no way of catching you, would you take it? Bob?
No.
Alice?
You bet I would. Management here wastes more than that every hour. Let me in on the gravy train.
Suppose this was a mom-and-pop company. Would you still do it?
No. What do you think I am? I wouldn't touch that line with a 10-foot pole.
One little question. Jack's quick start can lead to a conversation that could last hours. It could branch into feelings about the company, about limits and integrity. It could get into white-collar crime versus blue-collar crime. There's no end to where this kind of conversation can go. In their purest form, questions will
elicit opinions,
uncover new information,
lead to problem-solving and decision-making,
develop alternatives,
motivate free expression,
and plant new ideas.
As you'll see when we get to the use of conversation in negotiation, questions can help keep you in control of a discussion, and they can be invaluable in keeping the negotiation on track with no misunderstandings. Used properly, they can initiate conversation, even with a stranger, and help anyone find solutions to the most pressing problems. One last word about questions before moving on to take three. Be careful of the why question. In the wrong hands, it can cause anger, pain, and discontent. Some people use why as a sword, not to gently probe or converse, but to slash and cut.
Why didn't you get that report in on time?
That sounds like a direct challenge to me, and a challenge signals a fight. Aren't you really saying the same thing and getting more to the root of the problem by saying,
how can we be sure we meet future deadlines? What problems are you facing?
Many of us think of negotiating with some sort of negative mindset, as something done by paid mercenaries who have to do this unpleasant activity for a living. But negotiating is an activity, an important activity, that takes place in every aspect of our lives. We negotiate for cars, houses, and other product purchases. We negotiate salary increases, employee responsibilities, even where to take vacations with our families. There's no mystique to negotiating, even though many of us think of some people as being born negotiators. When you really think about it, those so-called born negotiators are simply outstanding conversationalists who know how to listen, question, read body language, and have a terrific sense of timing. How do you prepare for a negotiation? First, you line up as much information as possible about yourself, the other party, and the topic at hand. You make yourself aware of the barriers that get in the way of communication. In the Executive Negotiating Program published by the Thomas Register for its tens of thousands of purchasing agent subscribers, most of whom are negotiators, the point is made that if you're not patient enough to listen, you're going to foul up the negotiation because the other person has something to say and things aren't going to move ahead unless that person gets a chance to say it and be heard. Does this sound familiar? The program advises that you show with your body language that you are listening. Lean forward. Acknowledge something even if you don't agree with it. When you acknowledge something and then restate it, you're promoting clarity and discussion. And something else happens too. When you acknowledge and restate as part of your negotiating conversation, people will give you more information. And that information can be critical in helping you reach your negotiating goals. Listen to this conversation.
Let me be sure I have my facts straight. You're willing to allow us 6 months to prepare the material?
That's the maximum we can spare.
And you want the right to review where we are at the three-month period?
Right.
Now, this is purely speculative, but what do you think would happen if you gave us 7 months to prepare the material?
I can't give you 7 months. That would throw our whole plan out of whack. You'd cost us a lot of money.
Well, what would happen if we complete the job in 4 months?
If it was done properly, it would be a real bonus for everyone concerned.
Am I hearing that we could build in a bonus for early completion?
One of the most valuable ways to demonstrate listening is to use questions to show your interest and to get the other party to respond. And questions, as the example showed, can put you in control of the conversation. Earlier, we talked about emotions as a major roadblock to effective conversations. That's true in general and particularly true in negotiations when opposing points of view may collide. You actually grow in the estimation of the other party by maintaining your cool. You should always establish your fairness and rationality by saying something like this.
I'm willing to listen carefully to everything you have to say. I'm very interested in your point of view, and I respect your position.
Even if you've set the stage properly, you may be faced with someone who attempts to bully you. No matter what happens, stay calm and continue as if nothing had happened.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. I'm wasting my time negotiating with you.
I'm sorry I gave you that impression. Let me try to turn that opinion around with these ideas.
As difficult as it may be at times, do everything in your power to help the other party maintain self-esteem. When you do that, you keep the focus on issues, not personalities. If you don't focus on issues, the other person can become defensive and abusive. You can use your conversational skill to cut off disagreement and stay on track. While we're talking about emotions, there are two red flag words you want to avoid, or at least use very carefully. It doesn't matter if you're in a business or personal negotiation, whether you're negotiating a million-dollar deal or talking to your children. We've already talked about the word why. It sounds innocent enough, but it's usually used emotionally.
Well, why not?
Why in the world did you do that?
Why can't you do as you're told?
They sound like fighting words to me. And if you noticed, two of the three examples had the word you in them. And that's the second red flag word. You is often used to make accusations, and nothing can be more damaging to conversations when you're trying to get more information.
You said that we had until March 14th to comply.
You're making this impossible to follow.
You're always late.
Think of how differently this sounds. Instead of saying, you said such and such, try saying, I heard the following. Is that correct? What you're doing is letting the individual off the hook by softening your conversational line. You're saying that you'll take the blame for any misstatement, a small price to pay to keep the conversation flowing. Instead of saying, you're making this impossible, try saying, I'm having difficulty understanding how we can get past this point. You're not accusing now. You're saying you see a problem that both of you need to solve. One other thing. When you reach an agreement, be sure to summarize and clarify the terms of the agreement. There's nothing worse than thinking you have agreement, but the person on the other side of the table doesn't quite see it or hear it the way you do. Negotiations are collaborative efforts, and so are meetings. For some reason, however, many meetings tend to be exceptionally dull and overwhelmingly non-productive. Meetings may be the biggest time wasters in your business day, and yet, if the right questions are asked and the right responses made, based on good listening, of course, meetings can be an effective way to move you and your organization forward. What's that you say? You don't always have control of the meetings? So how can your conversation contribute to better ones? Well, there are a number of ways. First, you must plan for the meeting. If the notification to attend is vague or seems pointless, You may want to communicate with the meeting leader to get more information in advance.
Hello?
John, this is Rich Stewart. I received your memo on the new building meeting next week. I'd like to be sure I give you what you want, so I thought I'd ask in advance. I don't really have a say in site or architect selection, so I'm not sure what good I'll do at the meeting.
You manage more people than anybody else in the company, so we're going to need some input on space requirements for the present and future.
How detailed do you want it?
Well, it's just an exploratory meeting, but if you have supportable estimates, that's one less step for the future.
I think we could do a whole course on how to write memos for meetings. The authors of this program say that poor memo writing is one of the leading causes of wasted time. There's no agenda given, no real direction offered, no main topic spelled out, and far too many hidden agendas, which is something we'll deal with on Side B of this tape. The point is, rather than risk wasting your time at a meeting, use your conversational skills to ferret out in advance, one, the purpose for the meeting, and two, your role in the meeting. Once you know what's going on, your second step is to prepare for the meeting. Similar to a negotiation, you owe it to yourself and to everyone else to be as prepared as possible. In this particular case, Rich will put his facts and figures together on personnel and space needs and possibly prepare handouts to visualize what he'll say. In a formalized group discussion, good presentable handouts or audiovisual materials can be an excellent supplement to your conversation. The third step is the execution phase. Show up at the meeting early. That gives you a chance to do some pre-meeting socializing or lobbying, as the more political elements of your company might call it.
Elaine, nice to see you again. It's feast or famine with us.
How are you? I can't believe we're going to actually get moving on a new building. Don't you think it's about time?
I'm in a situation where I have people doubled up at individual desks. I can't wait to get more space. My problem is that I need only 25% more people, but I'm going to ask for 90% more space. I've been making do for so long. I think the money men don't want to hear how much it can increase productivity if you improve the work environment.
I'm on your side, Rich. First of all, I have a group of studies that demonstrate the impact of environment on the workplace. And second, my staff needs some extra space, too. Let's work together on this one.
As part of the execution phase of meetings, be sure that you participate. You were invited to the meeting and are expected to make a contribution. By contributing, you help the leader, and you can also help the group stick to the agenda. There's a group psychology at every meeting, and enthusiasm is contagious. Let your voice and your language indicate that you think the session is important, and others will follow along. If some people get emotional or obstinate during the meeting, use your questioning skills to redirect their focus.
I'm sick and tired of all this crying about space and environment. We pay them good money to work, and if they don't like their space, let them get another job. What I hear you saying is let's not go overboard on the impact of space and work habits. And I don't think anyone can argue with that. But would you agree that two people trying to share a foot space at the same time isn't the best route to productivity?
In a meeting, keep your conversation pertinent to the issue at hand. Don't let yourself be distracted. By making yourself accountable, you'll make the meeting run more smoothly. The last step to having better meetings is the part that many people prefer to avoid, the evaluation phase. Have you ever heard this conversation after a meeting?
What a stinker. I can't believe I just spent 2 hours of my life in that room. Nothing ever gets done. Nobody cares. What a waste of time.
When you're not the person running the meeting, you may feel uncomfortable about offering constructive observations. But you're really being dishonest to yourself, and to everybody else for that matter, when you take the easy way out and complain to yourself or a colleague, and then repeat the same process again and again. Use your conversational skills to make comments to the leader about the meeting structure and outcome. That doesn't mean you have to focus on the negative. If good things happen, praise them. And when you can identify ways to improve group performance, share them.
Bill, that was terrific. I think that's the most we've ever accomplished in that short a period of time. There were so many ideas. I wonder how much is going to stick. What would you think of having a secretary sit in or designating someone to take good notes so we don't run the risk of having some of these great ideas go up in smoke? That way we have an on-the-record follow-up system as well.
Another thing happens with well-phrased questions. You allow your conversational partner to take part in the decision-making process. Instead of saying, you should do this or that, you're asking, what do you think of this idea? Nearly everyone appreciates being asked. What are some of the other problems you can face in a meeting? You may have Mr. or Mrs. Know-It-All, who's bound and determined to dominate the conversation. You have to try to work around this person's ego and get others involved before they tune out.
And I want to take the ball and run with it because everything I've done with my team makes this seem unnatural. As I've said...
Al, excuse the interruption, but we're really pressed for time. We need to hear from Dick and Suzanne. If there's time, we can come back to you. Thanks for your thoughts. Dick, your thoughts, please.
One thing you can do to make sure you're reaching the group is to be a keen observer of body language. If you're presenting your views and you notice others drumming their fingers, doodling, shifting excessively in their seats, or looking everywhere but at you, you know you're not having the positive impact you want. Oh, don't confuse this, by the way, with lack of expression on someone's face. That may be a person who strongly controls his or her emotions. You need to concentrate on what's wrong, and the twitchers are telling you that something is. Negotiations and meetings take up much of our time. To make them pay off for you, you should